Greetings everybody, Andy Dukes here again and welcome to Ride and Talk. I love endurance racing. The modified bikes, the team effort, the physical, mechanical and mental elements of riding, being part of the pit crew, the technical preparation, the race strategy, the pit stops, the overtakes, the crashes, the night riding, the dominance of the established teams and the emergence of the challenges. BMW Motorrad's World Endurance Team among them. With the legendary Boldore 24-hour race just around the corner, I thought it was about time to go behind the scenes with the factory team campaigning the new M1000RR. So I caught up with technical director Stephen Kazir, a former racer with a wealth of experience and an encyclopedia of knowledge on the world of endurance. The petrol heads are going to love this one. Good morning, Stephen. Welcome to Ride and Talk, and thanks for being our guest today.
It's completely my pleasure. Good morning.
Right. Pit lane is open, so straight into the action, Stephen. You've got expertise in suspension technology, data recording, racing software, engine management, design and manufacturing of special racing parts, all the things that are vital for success in the Endurance World Championship. This is surely the dream job for you with the BMW Motorrad World Endurance Team.
Well, it's exactly that. I like being involved in all these different aspects, and that's exactly why I've been in endurance for so long and why this project that came along 3 years ago now is exactly perfectly the kind of project I like to do. So that was it's a dream job, as you say.
Now, you used to race back in the BMW Boxer Cup days and also in endurance racing for many years, of course. But what are your key responsibilities now as technical director of the team?
Let's say it's first of all is the technical preparation of the bike. So that's in this particular project is especially the coordination between the team and BMW, because it's of course a factory backed up team, which means that we obviously have an input and an important input, but normally all the technical parts are designed and developed by BMW. A lot of it to our request, because it's such a specific series. And then secondly, within the workshop and in the team is to organize all the technical aspects to be prepared for anything that can happen. And there's always a lot that can happen in an endurance race. So on a technical level, the parts, but also the staff and the training of the staff. So it's quite exciting. And it's a lot of work, obviously, especially since this is still a young project, but we see progress every single time we get out on the track. So that's very encouraging for the next races to come.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything can happen, and it usually does for sure. Now, you don't just need technical expertise. You also need language skills too, especially with this national, multinational team set up. So how many languages do you speak, Stephen?
Over the years, I've learned quite a few languages, not all fluent, but obviously when everybody's excited, you usually are fluent enough to make yourself clear. Our base language in the team is English, because that's what usually everybody speaks. But endurance being a French game, there's quite a few key people who are French speaking, but I'm quite fluent in French as well. Then obviously Dutch, which is quite convenient, because also Werner, the team manager, is Dutch speaking. So we can have more or less private conversations with everybody present. So that's a bit of a plus. And then I do understand and speak some German, but usually German speaking people are all very fluent in English, so that's not quite current. And I also speak Italian, but for the time being we don't have any Italian involvement in the team.
That's pretty impressive. How about Ukrainian?
No, I don't go there. I don't want to go there. If I hear Ilya speak on the phone, is not into my motivation to try and understand anything that he says. So he's quite good in English, so that's more than good enough.
Fantastic. Now, the riders, of course, are the ones who get a lot of the credit when the team does well, but there's an entire technical crew out there, often behind the scenes, doing an amazing job to get the M1000RR ready for race action. So for those fans listening who dream of a life in the paddock, can you briefly summarise what team roles make up the BMW Motorrad World Endurance Team?
Yeah, there is obviously quite a few key people who are working in the shadow and who are very, very difficult to replace. We've been very lucky on a technical level. We've got, I think, fair to say, the key person in our technical squad is Mathieu. He's a French guy. He's still quite young. I'm not sure if he's living the dream because he really has a hard time because we have to, as I said, it's a young project, but he's the guy that prepares all the sub-assemblies, all the spare parts, and that's it sounds simple, but it's a very complicated job in endurance. There's also a German guy, Gordon, who is also, he's been in endurance for very long. He's been involved with BMW for very long. He's more what we call our MacGyver. He finds technical solutions for a lot of stuff. And so that's the two key people in the workshop. We've got a parts manager, which is nearly a full-time job, Niels, who has to organize and coordinate all the orders of all the parts and all the follow-up of the stock for as well our own team as for some customers that are involved. And then there's obviously a key person, BMW bound, is Mickey. It's actually the BMW employee who's always there when our bikes go out on track and who has all the responsibility and does all the work that has to do with electronics. So that's a very key function as well. And then the rest is volunteers basically volunteers that do all the tire work in the workshop as on the track, timing people. So yeah, there's quite a big involvement there.
Yeah, massive. Yeah, big team effort for sure. Now, briefly, for those who are not up to speed on this format, what are the modifications that are allowed and are necessary, of course, to be competitive in the FIM Endurance World Championship, you know, in terms of bike setup, fuel capacity, fueling, quick release components, electronics, things like that?
Well, we have a set of rules that is quite similar to World Superbike, with some specific differences, though. And obviously, the focus points are different. For us, the main component on the bike, as you already touched, is the fuel tank. Sounds a bit silly, but also in my first involvement with BMW is what I said. I said the first focus has to be on the fuel tank. The second focus is the fuel tank. And the third focus is also the fuel tank, which can hold 24 liters. That's the only rule. Cannot be bigger, but for us it means it has to hold 24 liters, it has to fill 24 liters, and it has to empty 24 liters. And that's a very big key point where I've always been very strict about and very focused on, which also helps or defines or is a key point in the fact that we do well in fuel consumption. It's not that our bike is using less fuel than the other bikes. It probably is because there's other work done as well. But one of the key points is that we focus and we use the full capacity of the tank. So that's a key element. And then the next focus, obviously, is the quick change systems. I think it's fair to say that within 2 years, we've become one of the best teams in the pit stops. Is because we practice a lot. There's a lot of energy and time and resources spent in optimizing the quick change systems. Every hour we change the wheels. The rules, they change obviously every year, but in the current set of rules, we can change the wheels every hour still. We can also use as many new tires as we want. So that is for us every hour. You cannot fuel while you change the wheels. So it's an independent operation. So that's why you have to focus. You cannot say, okay, fueling takes, for example, 7 seconds. So we have 7 seconds for changing the wheels, which is not true because it's independent. So yeah, our wheel changes take about, I would say, 5.5 to 6 seconds. What is very specific to our team is that the guys in the front are faster than the guys in the rear, which is unusual for in the paddock. So it has become a bit of a challenge in between the mechanics. So that's quite good. We've got Mathieu and Gordon in the front and then Niels and Toby in the back. So in the beginning, I had to push a lot for them to do pit stop practices, but now it's been becoming a running game between them. So it happens that I walk into the pit box and the guys are practicing and fighting the stopwatch as well as each other. So that's quite good.
I like the fact that there's not just a battle going out on the track, it's also happening in the garage between team members.
Yes, exactly. And it's a strong point of our team, I think, as we have it today, is that we've managed manage to create this atmosphere of healthy competition without getting stressed to each other. So that's quite rewarding for all of them involved. So yeah, that's quite good. And then is obviously the fueling, which is also, as I said, the fuel tank has to fill completely as fast as possible. With one external partner this year, we've developed a new fueling system, so we gain another 1.5 seconds per pit stop. Doesn't sound a lot, but over 24 hours, that's 25 seconds, so that's nearly half a lap on some tracks, so that's quite good. And then there's the other interventions. So we have to occasionally, because we do nearly 4,000 kilometers, so occasionally we have to add oil sometimes. So that is also with a quick filling system, which is pressurized. The fuel cannot be pressurized, the oil can be. So yeah, there's a lot of things involved there.
And how about suspension and electronics? Are there any differences there from World Superbike setup? Or
yes, the whole bike is we tend to run quite a fixed bike everywhere for the simple reason that our bike is always a compromise between the three riders. That's the first one. But it's also a compromise between weather conditions. We need a setup that works well in the wet as well as in the dry, which doesn't mean, obviously, if you know that you're going to have a full wet race, that you can make modifications. But normally, we run the same setup, wet and dry. It has to work well at 2 o'clock in the morning when it can be freezing in Le Mans, as well as during the day when you can have over 30 degrees. So the whole bike is a bit of a compromise, which is not a big issue in the sense that anyway, we have to use tires that last for at least an hour, which is a completely different game than World Superbike, where everything is focused around using the full capacity of the tire in the set number of laps in a race, which is usually about 45 minutes or 25 minutes in case of a Super Pole race. So the focus is completely different. And obviously, World Superbike, everything is tailored to each individual rider, which is something that we just simply can't do because we have too many riders, and you cannot adapt your bike to one single rider and then tell the other ones to deal with it. So it's always a compromise. We have a lot of debriefs all together, sometimes individual, and then it's up to the technical staff to decide what to do. So also for the riders, it's more important to adapt to the bike, which especially for riders that come from individual sprint racing in the beginning is always a bit of a wake-up call or a phase where they have to adapt, is that they are not used, that not everything can be adapted to their wishes.
Yeah, I mean, one of the hardest things to do must be to actually arrive at a base setting that everyone is reasonably happy, because, like you say, it is all about compromise. It's not going to work perfectly for everyone, and they're going to have to learn to ride around that.
Yes, exactly. And that's also where there's a lot of things happening, obviously, in endurance, and the track can be dirty, or there can be a technical issue with the bike, or there can be a shifter failing. So the good endurance riders are the riders that run around that. I mean, we do 8 to 12 hours with brakes, so the brakes are not as fresh in your second or third stint as they were in your first stint. So the good endurance riders are the riders that can actually run through and around these problems and adapt to it. And that's where you see this. I must say we're quite lucky with the riders we have, because they all manage quite well to deal with all these typical, I'm not going to say issues, but typical
challenges
stuff that happens. Yeah, challenges, yeah. That's the right word.
So when the MRR arrived last year, did you have to go right back to the drawing board again in terms of getting it prepared for the FIMEWC, or did you feel like you already had so many sort of starting points and base settings that you could adapt, or was it literally back to the beginning?
Let's say for us it came on exactly the right moment, in the sense that we had done one season. The first season was a twin-year season, 2019-2020. We had done that season with a lot of, as a new team, also for BMW, it was very new. So there's been a lot of things that needed to be re-engineered or reworked or needed to be refined anyway. be it for a new bike or for the old bike. So when the MRR arrived, we just decided to use the opportunity and just start from scratch with all the knowledge we had from the S1000RR that we used, and then immediately implemented all the wishes and all the technical changes we had on our wish list or on our to-do list anyway. And then actually we started from scratch. So that was it's been a very tough winter. We've done a lot of testing. We've also done a lot of extra testing that wasn't pre-scheduled due to issues or new findings or stuff that happened in the initial testing. And but it turned out to be a good preparation for this season. So for us, the arrival of the MRR has been a very good thing, and it turned out to be a very good bike for us. So we're quite happy with it.
Superb. Now, from a rider's perspective, in terms of aerodynamics, speed, stability, ergonomics, all of those kind of things, what differences are they feeling with the new MRR compared to the S1000RR from last season?
There is two big changes. One, the engine power has quite a bit of a boost compared to last year, combined with a new gearbox that is, by the way, as a side explanation, a difference in endurance as in World Superbike. In World Superbike, they are entitled one gearbox that they have to use on every track, and we can change the gearbox for each event. Being BMW, we don't do that. We stick to the World Superbike gearbox, which is now optimized for this year and turns out to be a big step forward also for us. So that is a... But also the engine itself is more powerful. It's fair to say we and BMW started out quite cautious in the initial phase of the project because there was not a lot of experience with this engine and the endurance. And gradually we've moved forward and we've put more power, a little bit more RPM. So that's a step forward. And the other one, which has been a huge step forward for the riders, is the winglets on the bike, which gives them a lot of extra stability, a lot of less wheelie problem, which is obviously a good point, knowing that the engine has more power, and gives them also a much more stable bike. So also there's been a big improvement for the riders indeed.
Absolutely. More power and keeping the front wheel down. This is perfect. So yeah. Obviously this year there's a mix of, you know, 8, 12 and 24-hour races, but when races can last 24 hours, how much does riding style or mechanical sympathy from riders make a difference to the reliability and the fuel consumption, tyre and component wear, all those kind of things?
It changes a lot, and it's a ongoing process for us. In a sense that we do analyze and compare a lot. We see up to on the initial beginning of a race week, we typically see up to a potential of one or two laps in a fuel tank difference between the riders, and then we analyze who does what, which gears they use, when they shift, how they open the throttle, and then we try to talk to them and all talk or bring them all in line. So, but you always have the odd rider that does one lap less than the other ones in the fuel tank. Tire wear is the same. It has become a little bit more easy the last 2 years. Before, we had to double stint tires. So as a rider, you had to be a little bit sympathetic to the following rider, because if you destroy the tire, he had to do another hour on it. So that's not happening anymore, but still the tires need to last for 1 hour. And then another aspect is obviously the brakes. I mean, they can, depending on the rider style, they can wear down the brakes a lot faster in an aggressive riding style, or be very much smooth in their riding, and then we can potentially win one or even two brake changes over the race distance. So that is indeed also a point of attention, but it is an aspect that we do accept the differences in riders, because as much as you can ask them to adapt to a compromised bike, we cannot ask them to completely change their riding style overall. So it is an aspect, but we work a lot all with our riders, and also with Werner, our team manager, who is also an ex-rider. So we work a lot to bring them to the same riding style as much as possible, or the same fuel consumption and the same wear of all the components and all the parts. So works quite well actually in this team. So that's not too bad.
Yeah, completely different kind of pressure for a rider than, like you say, than a superbike environment, in terms of, you know, in the past you might have been saying, yeah, we want you to do these fast laps, we want you to do them consistently, but also we need you to sort of hold off and only brake at 85%, and by the way, you need to save a little bit of your tire as well, so it's almost an impossible task, isn't it?
It is exactly that. It is exactly that. And it is now we're 3 years on in the project, and we've got another set of superbike engineers coming by for a visit or to assist in a race event. So they also see what happens on this side. Because if you just look at the paper, it looks like, oh, it's just a slow version of superbike. But it's obviously not the case. Our guys do 40 laps nonstop within 2/10 of a second with 50 bikes on track. So the overtaking strategies, the controlling the tire wear and all this is a completely different game. So it's... Yes, the absolute fastest lap time is for sure slower, but if you look at the averages, and then another focus point we have is the in and out lap. So our guys are very much used, even if they don't attack like in a super pole, they have to attack from the first lap on every stint. They have to go full until the last lap on every stint. They have to also manage their own physical fatigue. Because obviously, if you do a sprint race the first hour, then the next 7 or 8 stints you have to do, especially at 5 or 6 in the morning, are going to be more difficult. It is all endurance on every level, on physical level, mechanical level, mental level. It's all, as we've seen now the last 2 races, we had an early setback with the crash in both of the last races. It's also a mental game as a rider to understand. We've proven twice that even with a crash you can come back to the podium. But obviously as a rider, when you get back onto the bike and there's still 23 and a half hours to go and you're 50th in the ranking with 4 laps behind, it's quite difficult to get motivated and to accept and to understand that it is still possible to go for a podium result. So also with this experience under the belt, it helps to motivate the guys. So it's quite, it's a nice journey.
There's so much going on. There really is. I mean, you know, it's a cliche to say it's a marathon, not a sprint, but it really, really is in this case. And when you think about all of those things that need to add up to make a successful result, even after, like you say, you know, 4,000 kilometers, I don't know, hundreds of laps. There's so many things that can go wrong compared to a short circuit race. And that's what makes it so fascinating, I think. But that is a subject for another podcast. I just wanted to touch on a little bit about data recording and tire technology, because I imagine that they've both moved on massively since you started racing.
Yes, exactly. Well, data recording, to be fair, I've never raced on a bike where there was a data recording system on it. So that's how much it evolved. It evolved. I mean, today you could not even race without it, because you couldn't set up the electronics or the suspension without it. Tire technology wise, there's huge efforts done by our tire partner, Dunlop, who make really specific tires, not only for weather and for track, but even for endurance. And they don't go as far anymore as developing tires per team, because that's way too expensive and is not justified these days. But still, the tires we used in Estoril are not the same tires as we used in Le Mans. There's extensive testing going on before that. Also, every tire we test, we have to test for 50 laps. So the testing hours and the testing track time is a lot more than in a sprint series. All that is in the background as well, but it also makes that we are well prepared. I mean, on any given test day, we'll gather around 600 to 800 kilometers of testing, and also the data that goes with it, and then analyze at night and analyze offline with people who are potentially not even on the track. So it's quite a big job indeed.
Yeah, you never stop learning, and experience counts for everything. And talking about experience, you've got a wealth of experience in all of your riders, but, you know, especially former endurance world champion Kenny Foray. Now, there must be a lot of benefit to having someone of his caliber around the team garage, even if he's not always riding.
Yes, exactly. Kenny is quite a pillar in the team. I mean, on the inscription documents, he's this year has been fourth rider in Le Mans and for the Boldor. They call it spare rider. For us, we just have four riders, because with the calendars and the calendar changes, it was the best option for us to make sure that we had good riders on any event, independent of clashes with different sprint series. So that's been a good move. But Kenny brings in a lot of experience. He's also the guy that, I'm not going to say coach, because you can't coach your teammates, but has done a lot of effort and has put in and had a lot of influence on the different riders we had in this project to work together. He's also quite experienced, as you say. He's still very fast. He's in Le Mans, in the Boulder, I think he was less than a tenth off the last Boulder we did, less than a tenth off the lap record. So that was quite good. So yeah, it's very good to have him there. He's he brings ease and calm in the rider group. He's also very interested and very well physically prepared. So he also helps the other guys in dealing with that and in managing that aspect of their race. So good pillar of the team indeed.
Yeah, true professional, absolutely. Now, endurance racing, it's always been given the highest priority by the Japanese manufacturers, and they've traditionally pumped a lot of resources and know-how into this race format. And there are also some seriously established work teams in the paddock who've been there for a long time, so taking them on is always a big challenge. Now, your maiden season was really commendable, but do you feel this is really the year to step things up to another level? Because from what I've seen, you know, results so far would suggest you're on the right track.
Indeed, our maiden season was a bit complicated, because we, in hindsight, we ended up not doing any real endurance races. I mean, the first race we did was the Boldor with a 13-hour break due to the weather. Every single race we had was a wet race, so it was a gamble for everybody. So it was a bit difficult to see where we were compared to the other ones. We had seen on different occasions that our fuel strategy was quite good. We had sparks and lap times very good. Did a number of lap records on different tracks. We made good use of that season to also prepare the technical side of things and the sub-assemblies for changing in case of technical issues or crashes. So that was quite good. So on all these levels, this year is indeed, it's still a young project. It's only the second year. But I do feel like we are at least knocking on the door and a force that is reckoned in the paddock and that is taken into account, which is the first step. We obviously don't have the resources as the Japanese put in, also not the history and the background. I mean, if you see people like Yoshimura stepping in and taking over the Work Suzuki team, that has brought them a massive step forward, because it is basically what they do full time and all the time. But it's also challenging. And there's, in the paddock, there's a good appreciation between the teams. We all know each other for very long. There's quite a good atmosphere. We get along well, actually, especially with the Japanese. They're all always very interested in our bike. It's also become a little bit of a running gag in the team to take pictures of Japanese people looking at our bike, because as soon as the bike is in pit lane or even sometimes they ask if they can come into the pit box. So it's actually quite nice. But yeah, it's challenging. I do believe that we are knocking on the door. I do believe we have the capabilities and the potential to go out and win races. We do lack some experience on some key points as well, technical as the riders. There's been a few mistakes over the last couple of events, and as much as we've seen and we've proven that even with mistakes you can make it to the podium if you want to go and win. These days you cannot make any mistake. It's become you need a flawless race to get to the podium. You don't have to be the fastest, That's what we've seen the last race in Estoril, where FCC was way off the pace, but they still won it because they didn't make any mistakes. So yeah, we're right up there with them, and I don't think we have to be seen as the leading team because we're still a young team. But we definitely go to the Boulder hoping and feeling prepared and working to march towards the win than to just participate and hope to finish.
Absolutely, yeah. So many things that need to fit together to even stand a chance of getting on the podium. And from a PR perspective, I know that it's always much more fun writing a press release when there's a little bit of drama, a little bit of, a few setbacks, well, big setbacks in the case of the first two races so far, when, there's been a great story to tell, especially when you can slowly over the hours start clawing those places back, and then things are happening in front of you that pull that podium ever closer. So it's a good drama, and we love a good story, certainly in motorsport. But I just wanted to touch on tyres again a minute, because I think you said that there are no longer the same restrictions on tyres that there were in the past. But how closely do you work with partners such as Dunlop in terms of development, and how do you decide on the best combination of tyres for endurance racing? Because like we said earlier, there are always compromises. You've got different riding styles to take into account, as well as weather conditions. And how many different choices are you allowed? Are you restricted in the type of compounds that you can choose, and how many compounds within those compound choices? It all gets very, very complicated, doesn't it?
Yes, indeed. So the only restriction we still have is that the total number of tires that you use for qualifying is restricted to 7. And this goes for the 2 qualifying sessions per rider. So that's a total of 6 sessions with 7 tires. So that's the only restriction. So when we go back to the race, or when we look at the race, there's obviously the weather influence. And if it's a race with changing weather, wet and dry and cold and hot, then you end up with potentially 10 different specs for the front, no, for the rear, and 4 or 5 different specs for the front. So that's quite difficult to manage. We always have a tire engineer with us, John, a Dunlop guy. He's been forever at Dunlop. I think he was born in Dunlop, and so for us that's a very big asset for the team, because he guides all that. But when it's a dry race or a full wet race, anyway, a race with constant weather conditions, then the choice will be limited to 3 or 4 possible compounds. And if you are well prepared, which we usually are, you know exactly, Dunlop can lay out, they track the weather conditions, so the ambient and the track temperature, and they set boundaries, and they say, okay, until this condition, it's this type of tire, and as soon as you hit this temperature or this condition, it becomes this type of tire, which is quite a comfortable way of working for us. It demands a lot of preparation work, because you have to run all the tires in all the different conditions to define these boundaries. But that's why we do the pre-testing. We leave on Sunday for the pre-Boulder testing, where we will run 2 bikes for 2 days non-stop. One of the bikes will only do long runs with all different kinds of tires to make a pre-choice for the race, just narrow it down, and then also to start working on this set of conditions and decision-making conditions on when to use what tire. Because the tire, obviously, if you have the if you have bad luck or if you make a wrong choice, you have to stick with it for nearly 40 laps. So if you lose 1.5 seconds per lap because of a wrong tire choice, you might end up just losing a full lap because of that choice. So getting the correct tire in at the correct time is another key element to add as many laps to your total at the end of the race. And that's actually the game to play.
Yeah, hence the importance of development and testing. And I'm not sure, did you say earlier that, I know you said you're doing a lot more testing than you've done in the past, but are there any limits on the amount of testing that teams are able to do?
No. In endurance, you can do as much testing as you want. The limit is obviously time, and even more than time is budget. When we do testing, we often go in what we call guerrilla style. We just take two mechanics, two bikes, and the riders. So it's not the big voyage with the complete team. And if we go testing, or when we go testing, we go with a specific purpose on specific tests. So that's the way we deal with it. There's no limit to it. But it's obviously, it is still limited. I mean, also the time between the events is limited. But a lot of the testing we do is indeed checking the different tire specs that are available and seeing what we have to adapt to the bike. Let me say that in sprint racing, you usually adapt the bike to the preference of the rider and to make the rider happy. In endurance racing, you adapt the bike to make the tire happy and to make it last. Because you need the tire more at the last five laps than in the first five laps. Because there's too much traffic anyway to hit the absolute lap times. The key is not the fastest time. The key is the fastest average lap time. And that's where we focus on. But that's, I think, for our riders, still the biggest challenge. Because a rider brain doesn't work like that. A rider brain doesn't calculate averages. They only look at the fastest lap time. But yeah.
Well, that's why it's so good to have people within the team management who have gone through the whole sort of, you know, the life of a rider and had those ups and downs and have that understanding and background and experience. So finally, Stephen, looking ahead to the next round in France, is the approach for the Boldore 24 hours completely different for an 8-hour race such as the final round in most in the Czech Republic, or is the general approach quite similar?
No, the general approach is similar. I mean, for us, a race event is 1 week, be it 24 or 8 hours of racing. The general approach is similar. The focus points are also similar. The emphasis is more track bound. I mean, in Le Mans, for example, it's the overtaking behavior of the bike is very important because of the nature of the track. For the Boldore, because of the length of the track and the high speed, it's even more important there than on any other track to know to maximize or to optimize your fuel consumption. Because for any lap, you can do more in one lap, in one fuel tank, you'll end up doing one stop less. And since the Boldore, by nature or by architecture of the track, it's a double pit lane. So any pit stop costs a lot of time. So that will be definitely a focus point. But apart from that, the Boldore is quite simple. It's a track that is quite easy to learn. It's quite simple as a track. It's not so delicate for the tires, but it's very high speed. And then the rest of the preparation always, and that it keeps repeating itself because that's the nature of the game, is to prepare all the sub-assemblies. We actually built the bike in sub-assembly. So in anything that happens, if you have a crash in the race or even in the preparation week, that you can quickly change. But to be able to do that, you need to build assemblies that are as big as possible. So you change as many parts as possible in as little time as possible. And every assembly needs to be checked and be function checked on every bike before every event to be sure that if you make a change that you can just send the rider out in safety without any risk. So this preparation work is always the same, and it doesn't change for a 24 or a 8-hour race.
No, but I guess an 8-hour race for a rider and possibly team members probably feels a little bit like a sprint race compared to a 24-hour race like the Bowl.
Yes, an 8-hour race you have you have to be a little bit less conservative on endurance, both physically as technically. Though technically for us, it doesn't make any difference. We don't work with different engines for 8 hours or 24 hours. So all that is the same. Obviously, the riders, they have to push a little bit more hard because the nature of the race is that it is going a little bit faster. On the other hand, there's the added stress of the margin for error that is even smaller because you obviously have less time to make up in case you make an error or you have to start the chase to come back. So yeah, that does change. But for the preparation or on technical level, there is not a lot of difference between 24 hours and 8 hours.
And what about the fans? Are they going to let the fans in this year for the Bowl?
As far as I know, yes, there's going to be 30,000, I think. It's still not the crowd of 80 or 90,000 that we used to. Well, we're not used to it anymore, but that we had in the past and that we hope that comes back. But there's definitely going to be crowd, and that is obviously very nice, especially at the start or at the early morning hours. It's always very nice to have the crowds there and to have this cheering. Also, at the end of the race, if you're lucky to get a decent result, it's always more nice to have crowds there than to just have the paddock people, because there's still a big crowd in the paddock, but it's not the same as the public.
No, you need that support at, you know, 3:30 in the morning when it's chucking it down with rain, but you still got people sort of cheering you around every lap, and you can see the lights in the distance, and you can sort of, you know, see the little barbecues and things like that. It's just important for motivation, isn't it? And just great to have the fans there. Yeah,
it's exactly that. I mean, even if you're struggling or you're tired and you look at the horizon, you see them partying, you hear the music, you see the fires, the barbecues, and sometimes they fire up a lot of other stuff as well. So it is part of our game in endurance. So we're quite happy and quite excited that it all comes back.
Fantastic. Well, Stephen, I could talk to you all day, honestly. I've learned so much today, and I'm sure our listeners have too. So thanks for being our guest, and I wish you and the team the very best of luck for the rest of the season and beyond, of course.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll talk to you soon then.
Thanks, Stephen. I really enjoyed that chat. And I'm also going to try and catch up with team manager Werner Damon in the build-up to the championship finale in the Czech Republic, so look out for that one. And just to confirm, the organisers of this month's Boldor have now announced that there's going to be no limit on the number of spectators allowed at the track. All race fans have to do is turn up, show their health passport and their ticket, so why not pack up your camping gear, get on your bike and join the party. See you there.